that, that we need to make friends, and that's how we're going to move forward, is by creating long-lasting relationships with people in these spaces and actually fostering those relationships. So I think I really let them take the lead, and I hope I'm doing all right.
Is there anything in particular that you wanted to accomplish through this exhibit?
Yeah, I wanted to talk about the potlatch in a way that I don't think it's really been talked about, with like a focus of gifting. Everything that's shown up there is a gift and a payment. And I wanted to like really reclaim that phrase and say, hey, no, this is actually how we give. While also like having people think about the weight behind any sort of anything they're given at a potlatch or anywhere else. You know, at the opening we gave a number of things, and I said I want everyone to remember why we, when we accept gifts, what that means. The responsibility that actually means, and remember what you're taking on, that you then are responsible for carrying them forward and telling people what happened, and to have the same moment I did with those mugs.
Yeah, I was going to say, when you were mm-hmm. talking about the mugs and, well, so many other things in the exhibit, it's clear that, you know, there's much more to a gift than it just being mm-hmm. like an object
yeah.
you were given. Right?
Yeah, totally. I think everything, just in even our day-to-day lives, is done with intention, and or should be. And we should also be thinking about them intentionally, like thinking about, you know, what does it actually mean? And what do I need to do now to create this relationship that's reciprocal?
What do you hope that people who come to see the exhibit take away from it?
Yeah, I hope they ditto to everything I just said. Yeah, I think I want them to take away... maybe just like learn something that I didn't know before about the potlatch and what it is to our people, and they're more beyond just a feast or a gathering or a celebration. There's a lot of depth, and they're very profound, and they're the foundation of who we are as Northwest Coast people. And if I really wanted to do an exhibition on the potlatch, then it would probably need a space much, much larger to really talk about and do it true justice. So this is just like a sneak peek into what a Haida potlatch is. Yeah.
Did you learn anything through the curation and putting together of this exhibition?
I want to say yes, but I think I really was leaning on my family and my community, and they really just reminded me, like, oh, this is all stuff you know. Mm. And so it was more so just a reminder to lean on my community, and I probably know more than I think I do, and to just have confidence in my own myself, because all this stuff is, you know, stuff I've been living my entire life, so it's just trusting in what I know.
Well, sometimes it's good to relearn what you already know.
Yeah.
Right?
That was my conversation with Amelia Ray, assistant curator at the Bill Reed Gallery of Northwest Coast Art and the primary curator of the new exhibition Indian Giver, which is at the Bill Reed Gallery from now until February 22nd, 2026. I highly recommend going to see it. Some really cool items, a really great concept, and... I mean, anytime you can be in that building, you should take the chance. It's really great. The previous exhibition that I did an interview for, Kiliata White, his work is still there. And there's a lot of, well, Bill Reed stuff there and just permanent fixtures. But I definitely recommend going to check out this exhibition. Okay, we're going to hear now some more music. And this time, it's the opposite of local. This is music from Japan, from a record label called Ungulates. And I was really excited because I was going to go see a show, sort of a showcase by this record label Ungulates, who does sort of DIY emo and screamo and punk related stuff. But it turns out that I thought that I could go on the Sunday because I was flying in on Saturday, but because of the way time and time zones work, I will be leaving on Saturday and getting in at 9 p.m. on Sunday night, and so I'll miss this show. But that's not the end of the world, because that led me to discover this band that I really, really like. And so I'm going to play you a track by Seventh Jet Balloon called Grand Slam. Speak Up on CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby. That was Grand Slam by Seventh Jet Balloon. That one goes out to my friend Jamie, who loves emo and baseball. And both of those involved in that track by the Japanese band Seventh Jet Balloon. I'm going to Japan, so I'm playing some Japanese music. But now we're going to take a different trip. We're going to take a trip to Nanaimo and hear this story from Lauren McKenzie.
This is a C2N News update. Housing, health, and street disorder were top of mind at this year's Union and British Columbia Municipalities Convention, this year held in Victoria. C2I spoke with members of the Nanaimo City Council who attended to hear what their takeaways were from the week. Mayor Nanaimo Leonard Krogh says one of his takeaways came from discussions around street disorder, mental health, addiction, and as he would put it, the brain injury crisis.
There's no question that the street disorder issue is a dominant issue in many, many, many municipalities. Hardly anyone is untouched, even some of the much smaller communities. A community like Terrace is probably suffering worse than us. Courtney is probably worse off than us, too.
He says the week was filled with members of municipalities and various cabinet ministers meeting to talk about what can be done to improve the situation. Mayor Krogh says while Nanaimo is meeting or exceeding its housing targets in the private sector, they are low in the area of subsidized supportive housing.
And those targets can only be met if the province provides the money through BC Housing and builds those kinds of housing units.
On Wednesday, Mayor Krogh was joined by other mayors and council members from across the province on the steps of the legislature to call on the province to deal with the rapid street disorder affecting many communities.
And I am hoping that that will continue to keep the pressure on the provincial government to move forward with the necessary resources, supports, and programs to try and solve the misery that is in the streets of every community of any size in British Columbia.
Krogh says there's a key agreement that all municipalities will have to work harder collectively with the provincial and federal governments. But there is still a lot to celebrate as communities like Nanaimo have seen an increase in tourism, helping to boost local economies.
There are some bright spots on the horizon economically, and we need to celebrate those as we face, I suspect, what will be a challenging winter.
One motion that was brought up over the convention called on the provincial government to recognize housing as a human right and focus on housing and homelessness strategies. The city of Nanaimo was one of the co-sponsors of the resolution after council voted unanimously back in June of this year to support it. Councillor Hillary Eastmere brought the resolution to council. She says she felt bringing it to the UBCM was important.
Housing affordability and homelessness is something that is impacting pretty much every single community across BC. It's part of the reason why it's really important to come to a convention like this, to really understand that it is not just Nanaimo and that there are solutions to this when we make systemic changes at the provincial and federal level. So advocating for that resolution on housing as a human right is really important so that we can get the province to say it out loud and then make the changes that we need.
Resolution NR17, calling on the provincial government to recognize housing as a human right, passed unanimously. During the convention, Eastmere also seconded a motion to amend the agenda to get an emergency resolution added regarding action on the Israeli-Palestinian conflict.
What we were looking for was for the province to tell the federal government that we need a two-way arms embargo so that Canada stops shipping parts that are being used to carry out what the UN has declared is a genocide happening in Gaza. We also called for products, Israeli products, to be removed from BC shelves. There is a precedent for this already, the same thing that the province did with Russian wine. And then we also called for provincial support for Gazan resettlement here in BC.
While majority of the delegates voted in favor of amending the agenda to get the resolution to the floor for debate, they did not reach the 3/5 or 60% threshold needed for it to pass.
And so the standing vote really showed that we are in the majority. The majority of people are not okay with the genocide being carried out, and they recognize that all elected representatives need to be using their voice to call for action at every level of government.
Another hot-button item at the UBCM convention was healthcare. Councillor Janice Perino says as the chairperson for the Hospital District Board, a lot of her week was spent in meetings with ministers discussing the Nanaimo Regional General Hospital. They are hoping the government will soon do their part on the planned catheterization lab.
We're ready to do our share. We're wanting them to move forward to the business and concept plan, which is, it's not putting the shovel in the ground, but it's the first stage that has to happen because that stage will tell us what the hospital really needs.
She says from the discussions, she is hopeful for good news on a long-awaited cath lab, knowing how important it would be not just for Nanaimo, but the rest of the central North Vancouver Island.
Pushing them to, you know, say yes to this next stage, get us going, because we're technically the tertiary hospital, and really all we have is one service of tertiary level, which is the nephrology, which is the kidney dialysis and all of that work. And so it's not enough. We need to be serving the entire central and North communities.
Regular council meetings are set to return on Monday, October 6th at 7 p.m. For Sichuan News, this is Laura McKenzie.
This report was made with the support of the Local Journalism Initiative, the Community Radio Fund of Canada, and listeners like you. You can find more news updates, interviews, and stories from our nonprofit newsroom, as well as our news and current affairs podcast, Midcoast Morning, at chly.ca/news.
Thanks to Lauren McKenzie of CHLY in Nanaimo for that report. This is Speak Up on CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby. I'm Jesse, and we're getting towards the end of things, but I want to get at least one more song in before we hear my conversation with Min. And this is a Vancouver band that was formed in Tokyo and is named after Shimbashi Station, which is a station in Tokyo. So two worlds collide, and we'll hear this, and then we'll hear my conversation with Min, and that'll be it. So I will see you in a few weeks. But enjoy this. This is called Can't I Just... We're here at CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby. I'm Jesse, here with Min. Hello, Min.
Hi, I'm Min, a volunteer at CJSF. And I'm here to share with everyone about just a new movie I watched lately during the summer break. that had been giving me quite a lot of impression and thoughts. I also had posted on my social media account, shared with some friends, and it had been receiving quite a lot of reactions. So now I want to share it with the listeners of our radio as well. The movie name is Ender's Game, and it seems to be based on a novel. Yeah, and Jesse, you already have read it, right?
Yeah, the book Ender's Game, written by Orson Scott Card, which came out a long time ago. I think that it's the 1985 is when it came out. And I read it when I was a teenager, and a couple of years ago, actually, I think before this movie came out, because I wanted to have read it before I watched the movie.
Is it a classic?
Yeah, I'd say so. I think it's pretty influential in the world of science fiction, and a lot of people have definitely read the book. It is, let's see.
When I watched this movie, I have known nothing about either the book or the movie or the how it went out. So just a little bit of introduction on what it's about. Ender's Game is a sci-fi movie. Really interesting on how it delivers messages about war, about human morals and maturity. The story goes around Ender Wiggins, a little boy who was enrolled into a school, an elite school named Battle School. It's quite an odd name, if you ask me.
Yeah, a little on the nose.
Yeah. Here, teenagers, the most skilled and talented on the planet, or trained to become the next leader of the human militaries against an alien race that's trying to invade Earth. And these children, they have to compete really hard and sometimes aggressive with each other to become the greatest, the best leader, and memorize, being prized and memorized as heroes of the human race. Now, this process of training was quite brutal, that along the way the children had, they're gonna show you that they had lost quite parts of their humanity.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So the movies go deep into the psychology of Ender. Although he was prized as a genius by people around him, but he still got a sensitive part that make him face quite some pressures and challenges along the and the environment, the harsh environment of a military camp. Would you call it a military camp or
academy, maybe?
Yeah.
Or a military school, even. Yeah.
Yeah. And from his struggles, the movie just put out, make us question, how can we justify war, and how they use children for, put them into a military purpose, and what can be the consequences, especially mental ones, for the young soldier that they have to endure along the way. So although it's for serving the greater good, the movie just has a really big twist at the end that was quite astonishing for me. For the book those who already read the book, you probably have seen it coming. It may not have as much impact as I had. But from what I think, it seemed to be delivered really well done. It's really smooth, and just changed everything. My whole perspective about what was happening the whole way. So it was just that good.
Yeah, it's really cool when a movie or a book can pull off that kind of twist that completely changes the context or makes you think about the whole thing in a brand new way.
Yeah, seem like some really good sci-fi war movie with good visuals effects at first, but then the twist happened and this turned everything we perceive upside down and make us question if what we just consider right or wrong can actually be right or wrong in the end. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, an interesting examination of morality and whether it's sort of objective or subjective, right? Like whether there is something that is good or bad or whether it all kind of depends on your perspective.
Yeah. Well, do you have any thoughts on it? I know you're already watching the movie as well, right?
Yeah, I remember, you know, for me, anytime I watch an adaptation of something that I've already, a book or whatever that I've read, I almost always like the book more because I can imagine things in my head and just the nature of the medium of a book, it allows you to, you know, examine characters' inner thoughts more and just give a bit more of a fuller picture. But yeah. I remember enjoying the movie. I like Harrison Ford. You know, I'm going to probably have a good time watching anything that he's in. And definitely a visual spectacular. So,
oh yeah, I have already seen some similar reveals and also expression from fellow watchers of the movie. So some have already said that the movie doesn't have enough screen time to adapt everything from the book,
mm-hmm.
and. I guess they may not be good, really just good enough to give you a full perspective on the war against the alien in the movie. But from someone who had no experience or knowledge on the matter before watching the movie, it was I think it delivered everything, not everything, but enough to know what was going on, and kind of go straight to the point. I read some snippets from the book that its explorer Anders grow up from, secondary school, around that age to up to high school. But the book just had him in around 15 years old right away.
Yeah, they just sort of condense it, which you know you're gonna have to do because you can't spend, you know, eight years on screen in a two and a half hour movie, right?
Yeah, but what is most noticeable from the book's story? I already seen they being adapted in a movie, and I'm quite quite satisfied with that. I enjoyed my experience watching this movie, so yeah, I hope the listener that we having here will also share the same interest and may check it out too. It's kind of underrated. It's a sci-fi movie just as good as I just compared to Pacific Rim or Godzilla, because they also deal with strange creatures, alien creatures, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe also Star Wars. There's some space fights in the scene in the movie.
Hey, are you okay? It's okay not to be okay. Kids Help Phone is available 24/7, so you don't have to deal with your feelings alone. You can text with a volunteer crisis responder or call a professional counselor. Visit kidshelpphone.ca for more info.
Hi,